A helicopter school files an FAA complaint against a NIMBY city council. Get set for the big GOP TFR. And a U.S. congressman calls for a massive NASA overhaul. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, July 21st, 2008. Leading Edge Aviation has followed through on its intent to file a formal complaint with the FAA, asking for the agency's help to overturn a decision by the City Council of Salem, Oregon. The council wants to ban the helicopter school's operations at Salem Municipal Airport, aka McNary Field. In June, the council cited health, safety, and welfare concerns in voting to deny a license to Leading Edge. The school insists the council exceeded its authority. Salem has accepted federal grants for the airport, and FAA spokesman Mike Fergus believes denying Leading Edge's application may constitute a discrimination of access, putting further federal funding at risk. Local residents have fought to prevent a helicopter school from moving in after Silver State Helicopters folded in February. City Council overruled its own advisory board to placate constituents who live near the airport. So far, the city believes it's within its rights to require Leading Edge to submit a satisfactory noise mitigation plan before being granted permission to open. The FAA appears not to agree, but we'll see. Stay tuned. The Republican National Convention will be held at the XL Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, September 1st through the 4th. The national conventions of the major political parties are seen by many U.S. citizens as a celebration of personal freedoms. But if you're a general aviation pilot, personal freedom may not be the lasting memory. The St. Paul Pioneer Press reports the FAA will require GA pilots wishing to fly into Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport or St. Paul's Holman Field to get a waiver 72 hours in advance or land in an alternate airport like St. Cloud or Rochester and have your plane searched. There will also be a TFR in effect for a 10-mile radius around the XL Center. An estimated 45,000 people will come to town for the event. It's not clear just how many plan to arrive in GA aircraft, and of those who do, how many will need ramp space. The paper reports that 4 years ago, during the Democrats' National Convention in Boston, one regional airport had 100 guest pilots needing to tie down. Greg Fries, manager of St. Paul's Holman Field, says his airport has plenty of overflow parking available and sounds philosophical about the security hassles. Quote, "We haven't had close to anything like these restrictions, but we haven't had an event like this either," unquote. An incumbent U.S. congressman from Houston, Texas, is campaigning for re-election by suggesting a total overhaul of NASA, getting rid of bureaucracy and putting the scientists and engineers back in charge of the overall vision for the space program. The Houston Chronicle reports that on Tuesday last week, Republican John Culbertson told an online town hall meeting, NASA has, quote, failed us miserably, and, quote, wastes a vast amount of money, unquote. He then announced on Thursday he was considering introducing legislation that would recast NASA in a form similar to that of the National Science Foundation, an independent federal agency led by a director and a 24-member board appointed by the president. He tells the paper, quote, NASA needs complete freedom to hire and fire based on performance. It needs to be driven by the scientists and the engineers, and it needs to be free of politics as much as possible, unquote. Culberson is a member of the House Appropriations Committee, and he says that even after spending more than $156 billion in the past decade, NASA has given up a 40-year advantage in space exploration, relying on liquid-fueled rockets with technology dating back to Robert Goddard-era rockets of the 1920s. As is often the case in political campaigns, Democrats are directing attention away from any merits of the incumbent's argument and dumbing down the debate to paint Culberson as an enemy of NASA and an enemy of the 20,000 jobs it represents in the Houston area. Culberson's election opponent, Michael Skelly, says, quote, "It's outrageous to suggest that the agency that put a man on the moon has somehow failed us. I will always be a strong supporter of NASA," unquote. Like many space program observers, George Washington University's Space Policy Institute director John Logsdon gives NASA credit for making the best of a difficult political situation. Quote, "It's easy to beat up on them because they're at the end of the shuttle program and they've been given inadequate funding by the administration and Congress to move forward with a new program for manned spaceflight," unquote. Culberson responded to the Fuhrer by restating to the Chronicle that his comments were aimed at political bloat and financial waste, not at NASA employees. Quote, "It was never my intention to demean the fine people of NASA, who are working their hearts out to do their best with the constraints of a crippling bureaucracy that wastes money inexcusably," unquote. Culberson added his thoughts have not yet been put in the form of a formal House bill. The assumption that the market for private jets in the U.S. was recession-proof because of the wealth of the customers is being reassessed after last week's Farnborough International Air Show. For plane makers, the bad news is that demand for private jets in the U.S. has measurably softened as the U.S. dollar's value has fallen and credit has tightened. The good news is that other markets have grown at a rate that is lessening the impact of declining sales in the U.S. The International Herald Tribune reports Honeywell data shows the U.S. market for private jets has slipped below 50% of the world's volume for the first time and is now about 30% of worldwide sales. Markets such as Russia, South Asia, and the Middle East, where commercial air travel is booming as incomes rise, is seeing a parallel growth spurt in general aviation. Each of the major jet manufacturers has its own spin on what's happening to sales in the U.S. Embraer CEO Federico Corrado told reporters at Farnborough, quote, "Already we're seeing a slowdown in business jets in the United States," unquote. He added, quote, "Credit today is much more selective than a year ago. It's not as easy as 6 months ago to finance new aircraft," unquote. Bombardier chairman Pierre Beaudoin preferred to call it a softening of the U.S. market in April. David Dixon, who's Bombardier's head of business aircraft for the Asia-Pacific region, says the current economy may prompt business jet customers to delay aircraft purchases and opt instead to charter a plane or choose a fractional ownership plan. Coming up next on ANN, the patient who died in the crash of an Angel flight is identified. An accident involving a Cessna 206 appears to have been a stall on climbout. And a pilot abandons the controls of his aircraft to save a skydiver. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply canal tips composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for Monday, July 21st, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Authorities have released the name of a previously unidentified cancer patient who died in last Wednesday's crash of a beach bonanza on takeoff from Vandenberg Airport near Tampa, Florida. 49-year-old Patricia Snyder was being brought back home to Stuart, Florida, on an Angel flight mission flown by 81-year-old pilot Harlan Northcott, a World War II veteran. The woman was returning from what was scheduled to be her last treatment at the H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute in Tampa. Family members told the Palm Beach Post she had asked a family friend, 15-year-old Tyler McClellan, to accompany her. All three occupants of the A-36 died when it crashed on takeoff about 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time last Wednesday. The investigation is still young, but it looks like the Bonanza struck a glide slope antenna 100 feet from the runway and burst into flames. The National Transportation Safety Board has issued a preliminary report in the June 29th crash of a Cessna U-206F in Santa Rosa, New Mexico. The private pilot and his four passengers all died when the plane hit the ground shortly after takeoff, and the cabin was consumed in flames. NTSB cites two witness reports of the plane lifting off, reaching 200 to 300 feet above ground, then entering a 180-degree left turn with the nose high before apparently stalling the left wing and dropping. The intensity of the fire forced would-be rescuers to back off until firefighters arrived on the scene. an automated weather reporting station at Tucumcari Municipal Airport, about 53 nautical miles to the northeast, reported weather at the time to be clear with 10 miles visibility and winds from 110 degrees at 14 knots. Santa Rosa has two runways oriented 119 and 826, but the NTSB report did not say which runway was in use by the accident aircraft. You can read the unedited version of the preliminary report at aero-news.net. A civilian skydive pilot has been honored for taking extraordinary action to save a member of a British military parachute team. The London Daily Mail reports six team members were over the Joint Service Parachute Center at Bad Lippenspring in Germany for a competition. The first five soldiers jumped successfully, but the sixth one got caught when his partially deployed chute tangled in the landing gear of the twin-engine Britain-Norman BN-2 Islander. One soldier who witnessed the incident from the ground said, quote, "We were watching the plane when I noticed there was a man dangling upside down by some sort of cable. They must have been flying at about 140 miles an hour. He was completely caught up," unquote. At 3,000 feet AGL, the civilian pilot noticed the man frantically waving at the back of the plane. The pilot left his seat for 30 seconds to cut through the snagged lines and free the skydiver. Once clear of the aircraft, the jumper was able to release his reserve parachute. Witnesses said the plane was descending during the rescue. The pilot regained the controls in time to set up a safe landing. A technical malfunction is blamed for the premature parachute deployment. In a remarkable display of versatility, Air National Guardsmen from the 129th Rescue Wing were called away from firefighting duties on Wednesday, July 16th, and quickly reconfigured their aircraft for a medevac mission off the California coast. The call came in from Coast Guard District 11, Alameda. A fisherman was experiencing a medical emergency aboard a Canadian vessel in the Pacific. In the rescue's first phase, an MC-130P combat shadow tanker met the 85-foot Ocean Marauder fishing boat about 500 miles off Eureka, California. Four specially trained pararescue men parachuted down to provide treatment to stabilize the patient and to stay with him overnight. Thursday morning, the 129th launched two HH-60G Pave Hawk helicopters and two MC-130P tankers from Moffett to pick up the patient and pararescue men. The patient was successfully airlifted to the Regional Medical Center of San Jose's heliport, arriving about 5:20 p.m. on Thursday. The two Pave Hawks and their crews had been participating in firefighting operations in Chico and Ukiah. While also being on search and rescue alert, helicopter crews had dropped more than 150,000 gallons of water on fires in Northern California since July 3rd. The 129th Rescue Wing is the only rescue unit in the U.S. Air Force and Air National Guard qualified to fight fires. Still ahead, Eads Sakata celebrates the TBM's 20th birthday. The world's only flying Pitcairn PA-18 will miss Oshkosh. And ANN presents More Stupid Passenger Tricks. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, July 21st, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Eads Sakata is celebrating the 20th anniversary this month of the first flight of its TBM-700. A fast turboprop single, the company notes, opened a new era in business aviation. On July 14, 1988, Chief Test Pilot Bernard Dorrance and Flight Test Engineer Jean Piatek made that first 1 hour, 15-minute evaluation flight. The prototype plane was very similar externally to Eads Cicada's later TBM-850, which is built on the 700's international success. Jean-Michel Léonard, Eads Cicada's chairman and CEO, reflected, quote, "At 20, a human being is at the flower of his prime. At 20, the TBM aircraft family is demonstrating the strength of its maturity while enjoying the vigor of youth. The TBM's creators were visionaries who foresaw the promise of launching the first pressurized turboprop-powered aircraft, which has been largely responsible for taking Eads Cicada to its current position in the business aviation industry," unquote. The TBM was developed to replace medium twin-engine piston aircraft that were the backbone of business aviation at the time, but which were considered slow and fuel-hungry. This was back at a time when jets were beyond the reach of a majority of customers. The company will celebrate its 20th anniversary at Oshkosh. Eads recently announced it's negotiating to sell a majority interest in Cicada to French manufacturing group Daher. The Experimental Aircraft Association got the sad news Thursday that a second unfortunate incident will make the world's only flying Pitcairn PA-18 autogyro a scrub for Air Venture next week. Jack Tiffany, the lead restorer on the project in Ohio, says the wood frame fabric-covered rotor blades were significantly damaged and will require a complete rebuild. An earlier taxi mishap in June resulted in damage to the rotor blades and top of the vertical fin and rudder, but those repairs were done and the first flights made on July 10th at Andy Barnhart Memorial Airport near Dayton, Ohio. Once that got done, arrangements were made to display the historic aircraft at Oshkosh. It looks as though we're going to have to wait another year. Early autogyros resulted from an effort to devise an aircraft that could take off and land at near-zero ground speed, addressing a major safety shortcoming of fixed-wing aircraft of the 1920s. Designers succeeded, compiling a lower accident rate than their fixed-wing brethren, but autogyros did have some idiosyncrasies which had to be mastered. The Pitcairn PA-18 used a fixed rotor head. It was controlled using traditional airplane-style elevators and ailerons. Rotorcraft set up this way have handling issues at the very low speeds at which they're capable of taking off and landing. The prop wash helps the elevator and the rudder, but at zero airspeed, the ailerons have pretty much zero authority. Later designs use rotor heads with cyclic control for both pitch and roll, which allows them to maintain control authority as long as the rotor keeps spinning, regardless of airspeed. Learning the low-speed handling of an early Pitcairn involves lots of risk, and there aren't many Pitcairn pilots left as mentors. It's now time for another installment of Stupid Passenger Tricks, presented periodically by ANN to show you that the people who sit next to you on airliners really aren't so bad after all. The Guardian reports a First Choice Airways 767 made an unscheduled stop on a recent flight from London Gatwick to Cuba July 16th, after a group of 8 passengers drinking duty-free liquor from their carry-ons became a problem. The group apparently became so obnoxious that the flight attendants and then the captain ordered the passengers to quiet down. At that point, one of the drunk passengers attempted to open an emergency exit door at 35,000 feet. The man was restrained, and the crew diverted to Bermuda to offload the disruptive flyer. The flight's other passengers were put up in hotels overnight before continuing on their way to Cuba on Thursday. And finally, the airlines get special versions of R-rated movies edited so that nude scenes won't be shown to kids on airline flights. Well, unfortunately, if passengers decide to disrobe in flight, there's not too much the airlines can do about it. American Airlines Flight 725 from Boston to Los Angeles was diverted to Oklahoma City Friday afternoon after a passenger took off his clothes, put them back on, then attempted to open an emergency exit during the flight. He was eventually restrained and subdued by members of a Major League Soccer team. The passenger was escorted off and the flight continued to L.A. an hour later. Sounding like a clip from an old Ray Stevens comedy record, passenger David Peace told KNBC-TV, quote, "He was completely naked. I mean, he'd taken off his clothes, sleeping across the 3 seats," unquote. Apparently, experienced soccer players develop skill in dealing with streakers. The FBI says the man spent the rest of the flight in makeshift restraints fashioned from tie wraps and was sent for a mental evaluation when they got to Oklahoma City. Much to the relief of his parents, his name was not released. You know, this story is astonishing. Exactly. When was the last time you were on a flight with an entire row to yourself? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We'll discuss how big to make your traffic patterns and some tips for flying into Oshkosh. Bob would know. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.